This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. It's 107. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday afternoon in St. Louis. The YouTube live chat poll for today: do you share your political persuasion with people? If you go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel, you can watch along with us, and you can also vote in that poll. Leave us your comments on your thoughts on if you do or why you do or don't share your political persuasion. The election continues to march on. I think we're 83 days from Election Day, and it's rapidly moving through. And I hear a lot of people saying, you know, citing polls and they're neck and neck, and other people feeling like on the ground, it feels like Trump's got the lead. The number one question people have, though, is are they going to feel comfortable and confident in the results of the election? We are joined by our friend DeRoy Murdoch once again, a nationally syndicated columnist and a Fox News contributor. And I'm holding his latest article in my hand from the Daily Signal. DeRoy, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you.
It's great to be with you again, Annie.
So you've written an article and you're talking about voter rolls. And I think this is very key. There have been some news stories here recently. Certain states have taken actions to try to clean up the voter rolls. What do we know about various states and the actions that they are taking on this matter?
Well, what's happening is a lot of people think vote fraud is just people who show up on Election Day without voter ID and you cast ballots in person. The real problem, much, much larger, is the fraud that goes on with mass mail-in ballots. You know, this all started as part of COVID, and it was supposed to be temporary. Now it's gone on and on, even though COVID has passed. And once you send ballots out all across across the state, county, as the case may be, who knows where those ballots go? I mean, hopefully they go to actual voters who fill them out and take them to the polls or take drop in the mail or whatever. But you've got a lot of addresses where these ballots go, where voters are registered, but they're not actual residents. So, for example, in my article, I've got a number of photos. There's one RV park in the state of Georgia. It's got people registered there, even though people are not allowed to stay there for more than 2 weeks. So if you're able to be at an RV park, leave in 2 weeks, how can you possibly be living there as your normal residence? Regardless, you have 65 people at that place in Georgia registered to vote there. In Nevada, this is in Reno, Nevada, you've got a vacant lot with seven voters registered there, even though there's nothing there. It's empty, just a bunch of dirt.
DeRoy, we're looking at these. We're looking at these on our live stream right now while we're showing your article. So it's just a big, wide open lot with some like construction fencing or something around it. There are people registered at that address to vote.
Yes, correct. And this is in Reno, Nevada. And, you know, Nevada's very close. You know, the entire election could come down to Nevada. I don't have the picture here, but there's a parking garage also in Reno that has 81 people registered to vote at a parking garage. And then further down in the article, I've got this facility in Minnesota. It's called P&L Automotive, and they produce auto parts, I presume something of that kind. Auto parts and votes. And they're in Hennepin County, Minnesota, where they've got 143 voters registered at industrial sites of this kind. So these are not residences. These are not places with bedrooms and bathrooms and all that. And these mass mail-in ballots go out to these addresses. A lot of left-wing national NGOs, non-governmental organizations pick them up, fill them out, drop them off in drop boxes, and, you know, we're off to the races. And so a guy named Jay Valentine who is a security expert. He has helped eBay with its anti-fraud efforts, as well as Geico and a number of insurance companies. Also helped the TSA with its efforts to develop the anti-terrorist watch list. He has a very simple idea, which is you take the voter rolls and then you take the property tax rolls, you put them together, and then you can see when people registered at actual residences where people live, or when people are registered at gas stations, 7-Elevens, parking garages, vacant lots, casinos in Vegas. There's several casinos in Vegas where people are registered to vote. And then you go to the county clerk and you say, listen, these are not residences. Nobody lives at that vacant lot. Nobody lives at that 7-Eleven. Don't mail any mail-in ballots there. And by the way, it's against the law to do so. And if you do, you'll be in big trouble. And so the county clerk say, all right, well, I'm not going to send those ballots there. And if the ballots aren't sent out in the first place, the people who abuse the ballots won't have them there in their possession to misuse them. And he's estimating, this is not a small problem, he's estimating something like 500,000 of these ballots going to unqualified addresses in each swing state. In Pennsylvania, it's 1.4 million. I mean, this is massive.
Oh, 1.4 million.
Yes. Enormous numbers. And so I think it's absolutely urgent that Republican National Committee, the Trump campaign, Republican and conservative donors, and people who just want good, clean government support what Jay Valentine and this organization, Fractal Computing LLC, does. Their website is OmegaDigit4America.com. That's Omega4America.com. You can learn about what they're doing. And he reckons for $7 million, he can go through all the swing states plus Virginia, Minnesota, and Colorado, and go through the vote rolls, determine within a couple of weeks or so where these unqualified addresses are, and then go to the registrar of voters, the county clerks, and say, listen, don't send mail-in ballots to these unqualified addresses. And if that happens, a huge, huge, huge part of the Democrat left's vote theft operation will be shut down.
You know, I'm just kind of thinking this. I'm thinking a lot of thoughts right now while you're telling this. It's making me mad. I know people listening are frustrated by this to no end. You said Pennsylvania, 1.4 million of these ballots that are out there hanging around. Pennsylvania was decided last year or last election by 80,000, a little over 80,000 votes in Biden's favor. I mean, 1.4 million to 80,000, that's a dramatic impact. And so then I was thinking, when if I were to ask you a question about that, I mean, why would any one side or the other get dramatically upset if we were to take those ballots out of the equation? I mean, my assumption is that those ballots are voting for the left. And, you know, what kind of knowledge do we have that those ballots are throwing that in one direction or the other?
Well, you know, once you cast a secret ballot, it's a little hard to tell. But you look at the folks who are involved in these non-governmental organizations that, do this ballot harvesting sort of thing. They tend to be on the left. These ballots are something that you don't see. The right generally tries to get away from mail-in ballots. It's only been in the last couple of years where we thought, well, if we don't play by the same rules that the left created, we're going to be in big trouble. So Republicans have been very much Johnny-come-lately as far as the use of mail-in ballots, drop boxes, and we've tried to resist that sort of thing. Because we know that these ballots get abused. They tend to benefit Democrats. And then you look at most instances where people are convicted of vote fraud, not all of them, but most of them tend to involve Democrats. So this is something they've done very well. A lot of the dark money that goes to support these groups that are involved in this is money coming from left-wing organizations, not right-wing organizations. And most people on the right want to go back to Election Day, where we all vote the same day in person on paper ballots and not have all these loose ballots flying around, you know, being filled up by who knows whom and being put into drop boxes at, you know, four in the morning when nobody's looking.
Yeah. I mean, election integrity is something that I really believe that both sides care deeply about for dramatically different reasons, but Hillary Clinton still hasn't accepted the results of the 2016 election. She'll still say it was stolen from her. I don't really feel like if one particular side wins the election in November, that either side is going to accept the results of that election. That's where we are right now. And the only way to get it to the place where Americans can trust the system is where we have one person and one vote, and there's a chain of custody, and, you know, there's proof that you are in this country and a citizen of this country to cast that ballot. I don't understand why anybody would be opposed to it unless they're relying on the current system as the only way they can win.
I think the people who oppose things like voter ID and making sure people are American citizens, not foreign citizens, and so on. Again, these are people on the left. When Terry McAuliffe was governor of Virginia, there was a bill on his desk that basically said if there's an election where there are more ballots cast than are eligible voters to have cast them, that either you are allowed to or you must have some kind of an investigation. Terry McAuliffe, Democrat governor, vetoed that bill. I can't think of any legitimate, honest reason why anybody would veto such a bill unless he wanted to make it easy for people to cheat elections. And I agree with you, whether Trump wins the election or Kamala Harris wins the election, we all want to be able to say, all right, well, either my candidate won or my candidate lost, but at least it was a fair fight. And if it's not a fair fight, that absolutely corrodes confidence in the presidency, in Congress, in the courts, and people's faith in our institutions collapses. And that's pretty much puts you on the road to the ruin of a nation. We don't want to be there.
No, we certainly don't. DeRoy Murdoch speaking with us right now. You can check out his article with details on all of these individual places, including the pictures that we showed on our live stream at the Daily Signal. It's GOP vote fraud foes should fight fishy addresses. You know, when we talk about the consequences of the current election system and in during 2020 throughout COVID, they loosened the rules and the laws in state legislatures across the country to make it much more accessible to vote, longer time to vote. We keep hearing from the Democrats that if Donald Trump wins, it's the end of democracy. And I hear from people on the right saying that we could lose our country if Kamala Harris wins this election. Those are very big, bold statements. I'm curious what your thoughts are on the consequences of choosing one side or the other this November.
Well, I think the consequences are enormous. I mean, I imagine people on the left will disagree with this, but I think Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are not just your standard sort of tax and spend liberals. I think they're far, far, far left radicals, if not actual Marxists. They are dedicated very much to critical race theory and diversity, exclusion, equity, inclusion, that sort of thing. I know Governor Walz is very much in favor of all the transgender agenda, putting tampons into boys' restrooms. If parents disagree with the idea that their minor kids should go through sexual transition and sex change operations, including surgery, the parents can lose custody of those children, and the state will take them over and take the kids away from their parents. Kamala Harris has said in the past that she's for Medicare for all, the end of private health insurance, an end to fracking, all sorts of mandates for electric vehicles. She was a co-sponsor of the original Green New Deal, co-sponsor of Medicare for All. So this isn't just your sort of standard Bill Clinton or Walter Mondale or even Obama level Democrat. These are far, far left Democrats. And I think it's very important that these people stay out of the White House and stay out of governing our domestic policy or foreign policy, where I would expect nothing but weakness and capitulation from them. But whether it's a Kamala Harris victory or a Donald J. Trump victory, I hope at the very least we all can say it was a fair fight. And whoever won honestly. And I think the first step in that is to keep all these loose mail-in ballots from being sent to addresses where they shouldn't go. And I think Jay Valentine and Fractal Computing LLC's approach is a very good way to do that. And as I said before, Omega Digit 4 America, omega4america.com will provide lots of information on this and hope people support this effort.
You know, when you said Marxism, referring to the Harris-Walz ticket, I just real quick wanted to look up while you were talking here the definition of Marxism on Google, of course. And above the fold on my Marxism, definition simple. That's what I Googled here. It says Marxism is a social, economic, and political philosophy that analyzes the impact of the ruling class on the laborers, leading to uneven distribution of wealth and privileges in the society. And I'm just thinking, like, if you were going to Google Marxism right now, and, you know, I hear people say Marxism is bad. Google's not positioning this in a way that really articulates the dangers of Marxism. And the following the sentence that comes right after that, it says it stimulates the workers to protest the injustice. Isn't that really quite something?
Well, if you look up Nazism, and it says something like Nazism, the definition that Germany is the coolest nation on earth. I mean,
terrible.
It doesn't. it doesn't quite give the full context and flavor for what's involved. No discussion of having a dictatorship of the proletariat, an end to democracy as we know it, having a ruling class that stays in at gunpoint no matter what, followed by people who disagree with them being put into concentration camps behind barbed wire, and having to remain behind things like the Berlin Wall and the Iron Curtain without any freedom to leave if they get fed up with the rotten system in which they live. I think that's a more fulsome definition of what Marxism is. The version you just read to me sounds like California.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the scary truth of it, isn't it? Joroy, thank you so much. We love talking to you. And I'm going to encourage people to go to the Daily Signal to read the details that you've put together on these voters that are associated with addresses that are parking lots and not even finished lots. It's pretty unbelievable.
That's right.
Thank you, Joroy.
Okay, Annie. Thanks very much. Take care.
Bye-bye. Nationally syndicated columnist and Fox News contributor Joroy Murdoch. I'll say it again. I've said this before. I think this is really important for people to understand. It also makes the transgender movement right now make a lot more sense. Everything about the far left progressive party is to make sure that you only answer to the government and that the government can control and access every facet of your life. And the number one way to do that is to destroy the American family. Every single major pillar of focus that the left has right now is to insert themselves into the center of family. It starts with abortion. They don't put any responsibility on the man that was part of creating the life that exists inside the woman. The woman has an unfair burden, but that's just the way science actually is. Instead of telling the man to step up and meet his responsibility, they say, no, female, you can be as consequence-free in your sex life as the man can. Completely takes the man off the hook. Pete Buttigieg said so much in one of those latest Zoom calls that was supposed to be in support of Kamala Harris. So it degrades the American family by saying, you can just get rid of children that you don't want. You don't even have to get permission from your parents to get said abortion in certain states, see Illinois. That's the first one. The second one is in the education system, and it's the way that they use the teachers' unions that are fully funded by the teachers who they are supposed to represent. And they take all of that money and they advocate for far leftist politicians to get into power who then give those teachers unions kickbacks. That cycle is using teachers all across this country who do not support the politics behind the teachers union. But then they bully those teachers into staying in the union and trying to make it too difficult for them to remove themselves when they so choose for themselves that this is not the best representation for me. They're fully funded. They use that money to retain power, to gain power, to expand power, and to push those politics on people who have nothing to do with it. And they are far, far left, woke, progressive policies that they then insert into the classroom where they say, hey, teacher, if you have a kid who says that their name is Jane, not John, you must refer to them as Jane. And when their parents come in and say, it really seems like John's struggling at home, he seems very unhappy, we're a little worried about him, he seems depressed, have you noticed anything at school? You are not allowed to say, well, John tells me to call him Jane at school. Do you know that? You can't say that to him. So they insert government into the middle of that relationship between parent and child and control what kind of communication can happen there. And then the cherry on top is the transgender movement. The ability to alter the future of your family by biologically changing the bodies of children. And in Minnesota, Tim Walz, the governor, says if you don't listen to your child, the government will step in and remove your child from you and take care of that child in a way that you were not capable of. In what world does the government have the ability and the responsibility and the right to do that? If our rights come from our creator, which is what the documents say for right now, if we, the people, get our rights from our creator, then the government cannot come in and take them. That's why it says that.
No, not at all. I think she's had an extraordinary...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Several weeks. Tim Walz is an inspired pick. She's on a roll. She is, as he has said, she's brought joy back into the whole arena of politics. There'll be plenty of time to do interviews. And God knows one thing about last night without having heard it, that was no interview. So when she does interviews, she'll do it with real journalists like yourself.
The New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy wants to remind you that Kamala Harris brings joy. Do you know why they're doing this? Did you see my tweet last night?
No, I didn't.
Don't scoop me on this. I know exactly what they're doing.
Okay.
That's their answer to her obnoxious laugh.
Oh, okay.
Joy, joy, joy. They're talking about how happy it is. They're talking about how joyful it is. This is the response to her laugh. They can't make her stop laughing.
No.
The laugh, what most people who don't like her refer to as the cackle. That's what it is. I don't think that you could really sit and listen to anybody laugh for a long period of time and love it more and more with every passing second. Do you know?
I do, but it's not even her laugh. I don't think her laugh drives me crazy. It's when she uses it.
Ryan, there are a lot of people who just the sound of her laugh drives them crazy.
That's fine for you. But for
I said
me,
a lot of people. I'm one of them.
For me.
Oh, you guys laughed in unison so
it's
well.
Not,
in
I mean, it was a funny
thank
joke.
You.
We
just,
had to laugh.
Just keep laughing for 8 more minutes and I'll prove my point.
I'm going to hate my own laugh at that point.
Yeah.
I would too. I would hate your
You'd
laugh.
You'd hate
at
Brad's
that point.
Laugh. Man, make it stop. Everybody always compliments Brad on his laugh.
It's when she her laugh doesn't really bother me. It's that she should be talking while she's laughing. She doesn't know what she's doing.
I would like a genuine poll question to put up. Does Kamala Harris's laugh bother you? Maybe I'll do this, but I genuinely would be interested to see if people are like me. And women are traditionally much, much, much pickier about how other women do basically anything. Why? Because we're witches.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
I disagreed.
Yeah, you are.
That's true.
It's not wrong. We're picky. I say this as a female whose job it is to be on the radio and talk for essentially 3 hours. I know that there are things that I do regularly that drive some of you nuts. You can tell them. You could tell us what those are in the chat, and then Ryan can read them later in the show. Would that be good?
Yeah, I'll be most of them in the chat.
It's just Ryan reading his own comments. Her laugh is dismissive. It's filler.
It's filler.
She does it to, I mean, somebody can ask a very serious question and she laughs in a way that is dismissive of the original question, which kind of gives the implication like, who do you think you are? Or like, just kind of, dismissive is the best way to put it, where you redirect and then she just says something that is words coinciding with one another in a row, and then that's it. And people are like, okay, she answered the question. No, she most in fact did not.
But that is what bothers me. It's not even the laugh. It's, hey, Kamala, you know, and she, if she ever took a question, this is exactly what she does, but she never takes questions. Kamala, what are you going to do to fix inflation? Well, we know that inflation's serious. And that is why we are going to deal, you hear me, deal with this.
Do the work.
Very specific problem, because we know it's an issue for everyday Americans. You're like, you're not doing anything. And the laugh is just filler because she's trying to think of words, and those words don't even do anything. That's what bothers me. She's not able to come up with comprehensive solutions to anything because she's not thinking about anything. It's like a blank slate.
She'll repeatedly do it. You know that they're talking to her about it because she does do it less, which is good for her. Every politician who goes on a national campaign like this is going to be coached by people who are always telling you how annoying everything you do is.
Mm-hmm.
You need to stop this. People don't like it when you do that. Don't touch your hair like that. It makes you look unsure. You need to sit up tall. Don't sit up so tall. Just over and over and over again. So I do believe that women are going to face a whole lot more of that than men. But her laugh is a liability. And they're trying to make her liability a strength, which is, if you can show a campaign where you've got, you know, big angry voice guy talking over black and white pictures of Donald Trump, and then very oversaturated, colorful pictures of a joyful campaign, which is just Kamala laughing. You don't have to hear it, but you could see it.
Tim Walz holding a pig.
Yeah, made of butter.
Yeah.
Something. Not a horse.
We're in flannel.
But I don't know any more about that. It's just the entire thing is to flip the narrative on one of her biggest liabilities and try to make it, if not a strength, to neutralize it. That's what the joy is. Because there's nothing joyful about it.
It's also the only thing they're really running on.
Ooh, however, ignorance is bliss. Maybe it's even joyful. That's the way she is. She's not positioning herself on anything.
No.
She's not putting herself out there to say, this is the current situation at the southern border, and this is how we would absolutely stop it. She's revising every bit of history on the southern border, and she's saying things that poll well for Republicans when they're challenging the current administration, which, oh, by the way, happens to include Kamala Harris. In fact, so much so that she was the one who was put in charge of it. Call it whatever you want, but she was put in charge of the southern border because Joe Biden said that she was, quote, the most qualified person to do it, Kamala Harris. And we've arrived at this disastrous chaos that is at our southern border that's causing fentanyl to come into your neighborhoods, your suburban neighborhoods. It's killing kids that are making one bad move, one bad mistake. Fentanyl is killing people all across this country, in every state, across our nation. And it's because Kamala Harris has left the border open. And she has done it purposely. Why? Because when you hear her talk now about border security, it always ends with a pathway to citizenship. All is forgotten if they can. It doesn't matter. She can take the punches all she wants. If she, for the Democrat Party, can turn these people into citizens who can vote. It's the full wrap up of what we've been dealing with for 4 years. You let 20 plus million people into this country, and Kamala Harris wants to give them a pathway to citizenship. Well, you know what that's about. It's what people have been saying forever. I go back to what I said before. I think the Trump campaign, I'm not saying everybody else who's talking and assessing the situation, but the Trump campaign should not say anything else about whether Kamala Harris is sitting down for interviews or doing press conferences or whatever. That can be handled by the pundits who are out there who want to call. It should be handled by the news anchors and the news reporters of the biggest news companies that are out there saying, you need to come talk to us. You owe it to our readers to come talk to us and to answer questions that they have, even if the questions are going to be softball questions. Trump steps away from that and puts Kamala Harris's words in Kamala's mouth, since Kamala doesn't want to do it herself. Over and over and over again, when Donald Trump comes and gets asked a question at a press conference that he essentially sets up and, I guess, funds to put everybody there at Mar-a-Lago, when they ask him a question about the border, he'll say, well, we know where Kamala Harris is on the border. Quote her. Say where she is. Say what she's done and say, this is what I'm going to do on the border. When it comes to health care, say Kamala Harris is on the record with health care. Fill in the blank here, where she's talking about Medicare for all. And she'd be happy to get rid of any sort of private insurance that anybody has, because everybody has a right to affordable health care. That's her position. Those are her words. And it probably start with, let me be clear, and ends with period. She punctuates everything out loud. It's like she's doing voice to text. Maybe she thinks she is. Period. No exclamation point. Have you ever, do you leave voicemails for people?
Sometimes.
Do you leave voicemails for people?
It's been a while.
I almost am incapable of doing it anymore. When I talk into my phone and I'm not talking directly to someone, I have had to figure out how to delete more voicemails that I've left from people because I'm saying something and I'm vocally punctuating it. I leave voicemails so infrequently that the transition, because I text everybody that I'm talking to for the most part, that if I am actually leaving a voicemail, I always end up saying period, question mark. It's terrible. Do you do this? I do it.
Just roll with it.
I think you should just leave it.
Just have it be your thing.
No.
It's your thing.
No.
Yeah.
When I run for president one day, they'll be like, Annie's so stupid, she doesn't know not to say question mark. And then they'll play my voice doing it. And that's why I'll lose.
Well, that's
man,
okay.
That's super silly. Exclamation point.
Would you vote for me, question mark? I hope you do, exclamation point.
Every campaign needs something that the advisors can hone in on. Give them that, and then they won't have the other stuff. You know, because they're going to hone in on something. And you're going to be like, this is annoying.
If I ever run for office, I would be the worst and best person to ever have to vet for all of the things I said. Imagine the things that they could put out there of me that they could take out of context.
Probably 80% of it's going to be stuff that you said to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably. You will be my ultimate downfall. Rick says Annie Fry dictates her voice messages. It's not really that. I guess I'm dictating it, but in words to a recording.
It's just really hard for her to keep up with her whenever she's saying it, though.
I hope I've never actually left one of those voicemails. But I mean, I can think of about a dozen times in the last 3-4 years that I've had to be like, oh, crap. And I'm like trying to figure out press one, press star. What do I press?
I'm amazed you actually leave voicemails.
Not very often. But when I do, I screw it up. This is just the way it is. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's talk about this poll when we come back. I need to know how you feel about this. So weigh in. Do you share your political persuasion? We talked about this just, I guess it was yesterday, about people who are willing to wear the MAGA stuff, to wear the Trump stuff, to try to put a crack in the surface of how you're not supposed to be out in the open with these things. You've got four options today, 2 no's and 2 yeses as to whether you share your political persuasion. No, because it's no one's business, or no, because you're uncomfortable doing it. Or yes, I do it subtly, or yes, I do it anytime I can. Erica says, it depends on the company, but mostly anytime I can. Sometimes I don't feel like getting into an argument, though. Do you agree with Erica? Let us know. We'll be right back. In It, when they're riding around on the bicycle and everything is as happy and hunky-dory as they can be when they get back to their reunion.
It's not this one?
Is it?
I think it is.
And that's right before it hits the fan. And yeah. By it, I mean an alien
it
clown spider.
Fan. Yeah. The part where it runs into that big fan is like the worst part of that movie.
It's my favorite part.
Because it's a clown, but it's a spider. Fan.
Did you see
I've
that?
Never actually seen it. So.
I was going to say, did you see it when you were a kid? You've never seen it?
I vaguely remember seeing it on TV, the original.
That's
not
where
the new
it
ones.
Aired. It was not a theater release,
yeah.
Right?
But I was right at that age where my mom was like, I don't know, this is pretty freaky.
Good mom. Mm-hmm. No offense
I was
to my
like,
mom.
Yeah, but I kind of want to watch it.
My parents were playing Pinochle upstairs with my grandparents, and my older cousins were like, hey, kids, let's watch this movie. I was about 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Too young. Traumatic.
From what I've heard, the part near the end of the book where
It's a book.
It is a book.
Yeah.
The kids get together, I think, in a cave and they do some stuff. That's the part you don't want kids really reading. Because the rest of it, you know.
I'm not
reading,
talking about the book.
I know.
What are you talking about?
I think if you know the book. Yeah, if you know the book, there's a very, very disgusting scene at the end of it involving all the kids. And maybe it, I don't really know. Yeah, okay.
I just never got past the scene in the movie or the TV show
just
where Tim Curry's...
Well, hold on a second. What are you talking about specifically?
I don't really know how to even say this well. The kids, I don't even know if they're hypnotized or something, but they all
they're like in a trance.
Start doing it.
That's not in the movie, I don't think.
In the book. Okay. I didn't think so.
No.
Because again, I've never really seen it, but
have you read the book?
No, but everybody who has says you probably just want to skip this part. It's pretty messed up.
The movie did.
The movie did, exactly.
So your mom should have let you watch it because the movie made a good decision.
Mom, it skipped that scene.
What, Tim Curry part?
Yeah, the very beginning when the little boy reaches down for his boat and all you see is the big clown face of Tim Curry with the mouth full of teeth coming out and grabbing him. Like, nope, that's when I changed the channel. Yeah.
Harsh Truth said he stopped reading Stephen King because of that scene in It. I never knew that existed.
Yeah, it's a pretty famously gross one that you're like, Stephen King, what are you doing here?
This is really more proof that you should stop reading books and just watch movies.
Yeah. If you want to have good morals, you watch TV and movies.
The movie is a good example of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's stuff that they won't allow because of the FCC. It's the deep state stepping in on our favor.
This is how I lose the presidency. You're setting me up. No, I didn't. I did not know that. I'm surprised it's taken me this long because I've talked about that movie because I saw it at a very young age and it was definitely disturbing on a level that a 6 or 7 year old is not capable of processing. Disturbing. At that age, in that capacity.
I've read other Stephen King books. He always walks that line by saying things that you're like, is it okay really to say that? But it's so brutally honest that you kind of appreciate the writing. But
I'm so surprised that Stephen King is like that. It's just shocking.
Stephen King is kind of my moral compass. But when he does that, I think maybe... reconsidering now.
The YouTube live chat poll, on a completely unrelated note to anything that has to do with this show and Ryan Wiggins, I don't even know who he is. Do you share your political persuasion? No, it's no one's business. No, you're uncomfortable to do it. Or yes, you share your political persuasion subtly. Or yeah, you do it anytime you can. Brad, what's your answer to this?
I'm a yes, and I do it anytime I can. I'm like, not in your face.
You're bringing it up, though?
But I'll bring it up, yeah.
Okay.
I look for opportunities in the conversation to do so.
I am a yes, subtly. And the way that it comes up.
Slip people notes.
Do you like conservatives? Yes, no. Check one box.
He writes MA on a piece of paper and slides it over. And if they finish the GA, then they know.
The easiest way that this comes up, well, beyond the fact that I talk about this on the radio, that is the number one way it comes up. But if I'm talking
to
people...
But that's not you bringing it up.
No,
that's them bringing it up.
That's usually other people. The number one way that it comes up when I'm not the one bringing it up, or if I'm talking to somebody who doesn't know what I do for a living, is Illinois. Is you talk about Illinois and you just say something about taxes or something about the way the state is run.
People are universally disgusted with Illinois.
You kind of just float that out there. And you can tell by their answer whether or not they really... do care about these things, or they just are like, yeah, it's a mess.
The only people advocating in our listening area for Illinois to be run the way it's run are people who work for it. Like, who actually work in the system.
Yeah.
It is a personal affront to them to suggest that it's not heading in the direction that it's supposed to be, or that the Democrat Party in Illinois specifically does not represent American independent values, even the way a lot of Democrats want them. They just can't, like, the people who are vocal about it, they're almost all plugged into the system. And they're almost all a part of that apparatus. There are a lot of people in Illinois who vote Democrat because they can't stomach what the Illinois Republican Party has had to offer. I do think that the Illinois Republican Party is headed towards a reckoning of understanding that the non-Democrat that can win in Illinois is not going to be somebody that strong conservatives in Illinois like. And Republicans have to figure out in the state of Illinois if they are okay with that. It's interesting to look and see what happens in Missouri when, if you win the Republican primary, in a lot of cases, that's the actual election. You got to be the right kind of Republican in the state of Illinois. But it's interesting to look at Missouri just electing Mike Kehoe, who's the current lieutenant governor, who was billed as the establishment candidate, not the super right conservative person. I mean, Illinois has most recently run statewide candidates that are more like the Bill Eagles than they are the Mike Kehoes. And the Mike Kehoes are likely the ones who would have a fighting chance to win in Illinois. And if they're not Republican enough or conservative enough for the people who actually show up in those Republican primaries, we pick the super conservative person. And I love those candidates. Darren Bailey, the Republican choice for voters in 2022, he is a great person. He is somebody who is a fighter. He is somebody who is conservative to the core. It's a hard sell. And I don't know in the system that is currently set up in Illinois that another candidate like Darren Bailey is going to be able to win. I mean, in my opinion, you have to have an incredibly small focus and platform and commitment to the voters of the state of Illinois. The number one thing has to unburden taxpayers. And if that's number one, then a near tie close second is, especially in our northeastern corner where 60%+ of the population of the state of Illinois lives, you have to make it safe. You have to be able to define who the victim and the victimizers are, and you have to be committed to it. And everything outside of that, like, I think in order to be successful as a Republican in the state of Illinois, you would have to make a commitment to not touch the abortion issue. And Illinois is maybe the most progressive state on abortion in the nation. Is it worth, real question for both of you, because we're all Illinois voters in here. In the state of Illinois, is it worth losing an election because you were not willing to compromise on basically Pontius piloting the abortion issue, saying, I'm not going to go towards it. I'm not going to sign. I'm not going to make any push for it. If the legislature wants to push for it, we can consider that. But I am making no commitment to lead any effort to change abortion laws in this state. My focus is on the economy and on the safety and security of the people who are living here. I mean, that's a really, really tough question because it's a principled compromise that you'd have to make where I guarantee you anybody who makes abortion at the epicenter of their campaign will never win in this state. They just won't win in this state, which means we will continue to get further and further left progressive in future elections.
Yeah, I am a major ideologue. And I'm also 42, and I'm like, well, though, I'd like to see some action happen. So I'm getting to the point where I would just like to see if all politics is a spectrum and people are sometimes far left, far right, right down the middle, and anything in between, I would like to see it just move to the right. That's all. Right now, it's very far left. If you elected a moderate Democrat who was still left of center, that would be improvement.
Abortion would be made to be the only issue.
It will be. Yeah, that's the only thing they're going to run on. It's just going to be like the first district here in Missouri. That's all Cori Bush and Wesley Bell were running on.
I think that what I would work to do the most is to take a completely different angle at it. Instead of trying to focus on signing new laws, because as the governor, what you would do is sign a law that was passed by the General Assembly. I would work to provide women who choose life the resources and assets they need to make that decision easier, to help women who choose life. How do we do that? How do we make saying, I choose life, easier, as opposed to the alternative, which is politically DOA for a Republican in the state of Illinois? Let us know what you think on the YouTube channel. Let's talk about the YouTube live chat poll more when we come back. In it. When they're riding around on the bicycle, and everything is as happy and hunky-dory as they can be when they get back to their reunion.
It's not this one?
Is it?
I think it is.
And that's right before it hits the fan. And yeah. By it, I mean an alien
it
clown spider.
Fan. Yeah. The part where it runs into that big fan is like the worst part of that movie.
It's my favorite part.
Because it's, you know, it's a clown, but it's a spider. Fan.
Did you see
I've never actually seen it. So.
I was going to say, did you see it when you were a kid? You've never seen it?
I vaguely remember seeing it on TV, the original.
That's
not
where
the new
it
ones.
Aired. That was not a theater release,
yeah.
Right?
But I was right at that age where my mom was like, I don't know, this is pretty freaky.
Good mom. Mm-hmm. No offense
I was
to my
like,
mom.
Yeah, but I kind of want to watch it.
My parents were playing Pinochle upstairs with my grandparents, and my older cousins were like, hey, kids, let's watch this movie. I was about 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Too young. Traumatic.
From what I've heard, the part near the end of the book where
the
kids...
It's a book.
It is a book.
Yeah.
The kids get together, I think, in a cave and they do some stuff. That's the part you don't want kids really reading. Because the rest of it, you know...
I'm not
reading,
talking about the book.
I know.
What are you talking about?
I think if you know the book...
You should have brought it up.
Yeah, if you know the book, there's a very, very disgusting scene at the end of it involving all the kids. And maybe it, I don't really know... Yeah, okay.
I just never got past the scene in the movie or the TV show
just
where Tim Curry's...
Well, hold on a second. What are you talking about specifically?
I don't really know how to even say this well. The kids, I don't even know if they're hypnotized or something, but they all...
They're like in a trance.
...start doing it.
That's not in the movie, I don't think.
In the book, okay. I didn't think so.
No.
Because again, I've never really seen it, but...
Have you read the book?
No, but everybody who has says, you probably just want to skip this part. It's pretty messed up.
The movie did,
exactly.
So your mom should have let you watch it because the movie made a good decision.
Mom, it skipped that scene.
What, Tim Curry part?
Yeah, the very beginning when the little boy reaches down for his boat and all you see is the big clown face of Tim Curry with the mouth full of teeth coming out and grabbing him. Like, nope, that's when I changed the channel. Yeah.
Yeah.
Harsh Truth said he stopped reading Stephen King because of that scene in It. I never knew that existed.
Yeah, it's a pretty famously gross one that you're like, Stephen King, what are you doing here?
This is really more proof that you should stop reading books and just watch movies.
Yeah. If you want to have good morals, you watch TV and movies.
The movie is a good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah, there's stuff that they won't allow because of the FCC. It's the deep state stepping in on our favor.
This is how I lose the presidency. You're setting me up. No, I didn't. I did not know that. I'm surprised it's taken me this long because I've talked about that movie because I saw it at a very young age and it was definitely disturbing on a level that a 6 or 7 year old is not capable of processing. Disturbing at that age,
mm-hmm.
in that capacity.
I've read other Stephen King books. He always walks that line by saying things that you're like, is it okay really to say that? But it's so brutally honest that you kind of appreciate the writing. But
I'm so surprised that Stephen King is like that. It's just shocking.
Stephen King is kind of my moral compass. But when he does that, I think maybe... reconsidering now.
The YouTube live chat poll, and a completely unrelated note to anything that has to do with this show and Ryan Wiggins, I don't even know who he is. Do you share your political persuasion? No, it's no one's business. No, you're uncomfortable to do it. Or yes, you share your political persuasion subtly. Or yeah, you do it anytime you can. Brad, what's your answer to this?
I'm a yes, and I do it anytime I can. I'm like, not in your face.
You're bringing it up, though?
But I'll bring it up, yeah.
Okay, I look,
yeah, I look for opportunities in the conversation to do so.
I am a yes, subtly. And the way that it comes up...
Slip people notes.
Do you like conservatives? Yes, no. Check one box.
He writes M-A on a piece of paper and slides it over, and if they finish the G-A, then they know.
The easiest way that this comes up, well, beyond the fact that I talk about this on the radio, that is the number one way it comes up. But if I'm talking
to
people...
But that's not you bringing it up.
No,
that's them bringing it up.
That's usually other people. The number one way that it comes up when I'm not the one bringing it up, or if I'm talking to somebody who doesn't know what I do for a living, is Illinois. Is you talk about Illinois and you just say something about taxes or something about the way the state is run.
People are universally disgusted with Illinois.
You kind of just float that out there. And you can tell by their answer whether or not they really do care about these things, or they just are like, yeah, it's a mess.
The only people advocating in our listening area for Illinois to be run the way it's run are people who work for it. Like, who actually work in the system.
Yeah.
It is a personal affront to them to suggest that it's not heading in the direction that it's supposed to be, or that the Democrat Party in Illinois specifically does not represent American independent values, even the way a lot of Democrats want them. They just can't, like, the people who are vocal about it, they're almost all plugged into the system. And they're almost all a part of that apparatus. There are a lot of people in Illinois who vote Democrat because they can't stomach what the Illinois Republican Party has had to offer. I do think that the Illinois Republican Party is headed towards a reckoning of understanding that the non-Democrat that can win in Illinois is not going to be somebody that strong conservatives in Illinois like. And Republicans have to figure out in the state of Illinois if they are okay with that. It's interesting to look and see what happens in Missouri when, if you win the Republican primary, in a lot of cases, that's the actual election. You got to be the right kind of Republican in the state of Illinois. But it's interesting to look at Missouri just electing Mike Kehoe, who's the current lieutenant governor, who was billed as the establishment candidate, not the super right conservative person. I mean, Illinois has most recently run statewide candidates that are more like the Bill Eigels than they are the Mike Kehoes. And the Mike Kehoes are likely the ones who would have a fighting chance to win in Illinois. And if they're not Republican enough or conservative enough for the people who actually show up in those Republican primaries, we pick the super conservative person. And I love those candidates. Darren Bailey, the Republican choice for voters in 2022, he is a great person. He is somebody who is a fighter. He is somebody who is conservative to the core. It's a hard sell. And I don't know in the system that is currently set up in Illinois that another candidate like Darren Bailey is going to be able to win. I mean, in my opinion, you have to have an incredibly small focus and platform and commitment to the voters of the state of Illinois. The number one thing has to unburden taxpayers. And if that's number one, then a near tie close second is, especially in our northeastern corner where 60%+ of the population of the state of Illinois lives, you have to make it safe. You have to be able to define who the victim and the victimizers are, and you have to be committed to it. And everything outside of that, like, I think in order to be successful as a Republican in the state of Illinois, you would have to make a commitment to not touch the abortion issue. And Illinois is maybe the most progressive state on abortion in the nation. Is it worth, real question for both of you, because we're all Illinois voters in here. In the state of Illinois, is it worth losing an election because you were not willing to compromise on basically Pontius Pilating the abortion issue, saying, I'm not going to go towards it. I'm not going to make any push for it. If the legislature wants to push for it, we can consider that. But I am making no commitment to lead any effort to change abortion laws in this state. My focus is on the economy and on the safety and security of the people who are living here. I mean, that's a really, really tough question because it's a principled compromise that you'd have to make, where I guarantee you anybody who makes abortion at the epicenter of their campaign will never win in this state. They just won't win in this state, which means we will continue to get further and further left progressive in future elections.
Yeah, I am a major ideologue. And I'm also 42, and I'm like, well, though, I'd like to see some action happen. So I'm getting to the point where I would just like to see if all politics is a spectrum and people are sometimes far left, far right, right down the middle, and anything in between. I would like to see it just move to the right. That's all. Right now, it's very far left. If you elected a moderate Democrat who was still left of center, that would be improvement.
Abortion would be made to be the only issue.
It will be. Yeah, that's the only thing they're going to run on. It's just going to be like the first district here in Missouri. That's all Cori Bush and Wesley Bell were running on.
I think that what I would work to do the most is to take a completely different angle at it. Instead of trying to focus on signing new laws, because as the governor, what you would do is sign a law that was passed by the General Assembly. I would work to provide women who choose life the resources and assets they need to make that decision easier, to help women who choose life. How do we do that? How do we make saying, I choose life, easier, as opposed to the alternative, which is politically DOA for a Republican in the state of Illinois? Let us know what you think on the YouTube channel. Let's talk about the YouTube live chat poll more when we come back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.